Hi, and welcome to Love Sober Podcast, the podcast for the sober and sober curious. I'm Kate Bailey. I'm a coach, an author, and I'm a Brit mum from West Sussex. Hi, and welcome back. And today I talked to the fabulous Sarah Rusbach. And Sarah is, she's a Brit mum and she's living in Australia now. And she's a coach, she's an author, and she's just written a fantastic new book called Beyond Booze. And this is a really great guide to alcohol-free living for busy women in their midlife. And so I'm really excited to dive into this with Sarah today. So hi, and a big welcome to Sarah. How are you doing?
I'm really well. It's such a joy to have this time with you, Kate, having been in your world for such a long time and you playing such a big role in my journey to sobriety. So it is such an honour to have this time with you and to come onto your podcast.
Oh, well, likewise, it's so lovely to speak to you. And I think I've known you for years through the sober sphere. Obviously, you're based in Australia. I'm in the UK, yeah. But we haven't actually spoken. So this is a real treat.
I'm trying to think of when I first, I think it would have been about 2017, 2018, when did you launch this the podcast initially? It was about 2018, I reckon, because I think that's when I first came into your world. Listening to you was a big part of my sober journey.
Oh God, I'm so pleased. I think it was 2018, but I don't want to go on about my podcast because actually we're here to talk about something really exciting, which is your book. Yay to that. So Sarah has written a really fantastic book called Beyond Booze, and I've been deep diving into it, and I really rate your book. I think you've done a great job, Sarah. I really do.
Thank you.
Yeah, so we're gonna go dive into the bits, the nuts and bolts of it, and some of the kind of the aspects, because I feel it's gonna really help a lot of women with the kind of heart of what's kind of going on for us. Like, it's really practical. But essentially, you know, when we were talking earlier, we were looking at this kind of, you know, this sort of relationships and why women drink, you know, this kind of to often mask those negative feelings, to deal with stress, you know, in an ineffective way to deal with stress. And there's a lot of fear, isn't there, when you identify that there's something going wrong, but you don't know what it looks like the other side. I think all of us who've got sober can say, yes, that was almost like the worst point, and we do need a hand holding and we do need a guide. And I think that your book does that really, really well. So congratulations.
And that was what I wanted. When I wrote the book, I kind of could see there's some really good books about how to get sober and there's some incredible memoirs. But what I realized was a book for women on how to create a life where you don't need or want to drink was what was missing. And that was what I kind of really wanted to go into. It's a book for women. It's a book for midlife women who have been using alcohol in that dysfunctional way for managing stress or, you know, masking uncomfortable emotions or whatever. And what is it that we need to add in when we take alcohol out? Because a lot of people think, oh, I just have to quit drinking and then life will be amazing. And you and I both know that the quitting drinking bit is almost the easy part, right? When it actually comes to creating a rich, fulfilling, purposeful, contented life. And I wanted to share all the tools and all the strategies that have helped me to do that.
And what a beautiful sort of journey, and what an eye-opener when you realise you can resource and meet needs authentically and create this life that you love being sober in. So yes, amen to that. So what I'd like to do, just for people who don't know you, is just give a little bit of a backstory about what was your reason for writing this book from a personal perspective.
So I had I got sober in April 2019 after 2 years of stop, start, taking breaks, going back to drinking, taking breaks, going back to drinking. And then after I got sober, I retrained to be a health and wellness coach, a grey area drinking coach, and then a menopause coach. And through that process of supporting thousands of women all over the world, what I could see that there were so many similarities. And it didn't matter, there might be a woman in America through to a woman in the UK, through to a woman in Australia, all feeling the same way, all experiencing the same difficulties, the same issues. And I realized that there was some really core common themes that were running through these women. And that was what drove me to write the book, to be able to speak to that woman who is the woman that I was when I was drinking, and knowing I wanted to change my drinking, but being so fearful of what my life would be like without booze, because I was Sarah the party girl. That was my entire identity, was around alcohol. And plus, it had only been the only crutch I'd ever really had in my life for dealing with any kind of adversity. So you're losing two things. You're losing your identity, and you're like losing your best friend, like in one go. And it was so scary. And what I wanted to do was address all of those fears with tools and strategies that would help women all over the world.
Yeah. And you mentioned the midlife piece as well. It's really interesting because we've had such a similar journey, because I trained as a menopause doula.
Oh, wow.
last year with the menopause school in the UK, because I don't know if it's like this for you, but I feel like we create what we need, don't we? Like you say, it's like, okay, I know that I need to stop that. There wasn't anything out there, so let's create it. Oh, stress is a piece. So let's look at the stress and the stress response, fight, flight, freeze, fawn, and how we regulate the nervous system. Then it was like, oh my God, all of these women who are sober for a little bit or sober for years, suddenly hitting perimenopause and lapsing or going back to drinking. Hello, me. Oh, there's a hormonal piece. And it's almost like, okay, like we really do need that toolkit for midlife women. Especially when you're looking at Gen X, and that was our thing, that was our liberation, that was our false liberation, that was how we claimed our feminism, and suddenly we're hitting our midlife and going, this is not working. And it's like this unholy reframe, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. And I share a lot in the book about my story in that period in the late 90s, the early 2000s, where it really was about liberation, and we can drink the boys under the table, match the boys pint for pint. We can go and drink cocktails and have one night stands and do all the things that, it used to only be a male territory to do. And now women were doing it. And it was a liberating time, and it was an incredible time to be in the UK, especially. I remember it with such fondness. But what I can see now, looking back, is that it meant on an emotional level, I never really grew up. On an emotional level, I never built resilience. On an emotional level, I didn't have anything else in my toolkit, because I didn't need anything else, because alcohol was the quick fix to every single issue. And I worked in recruitment at the time. So you have good days in recruitment, and then you'd make a big placement, let's go to the pub and get pissed all afternoon, and you'd have shit days where a big deal would fall through and you'd be like, oh, I'm just gonna go and drown my sorrows. And alcohol was just perpetuated constantly as the solution to any way you were feeling, whether it was to celebrate or to commiserate.
And when you talk about that, I feel like that almost traditionally sort of male kind of culture. And I'm listening through that lens of the nervous system and what that is doing to our nervous systems, that big, like highs, lows, fight, flight. And then from a hormonal cortisol level, right? So the stress hormones for us, it's almost like that whole scenario, and then add alcohol in on top, is exactly the wrong formula for women's bodies, minds, health, well-being, and therefore our families, and therefore the people we love. It's like, it's freaking so toxic. And once you see it, it's like, I mustn't get too angry, because again, I don't want to rant, and it's your podcast. But yeah, like, it's just unbelievable. Once you see it, you kind of can't unsee it, can you?
Yeah, I know. But don't you think it's amazing how many people don't ever see it? Like, and so many people will go through their entire life without ever fully appreciating or realizing how alcohol is. I mean, I speak to this all the time. I think it kills your soul. It dulls your light. Like, you can't ever live to your full potential in your life if you are drinking so constantly. You can't. There is no way, because it impacts your anxiety, your stress, your sleep, your energy, your self-talk, all of those things. I lost my confidence. I wasn't a risk taker anymore. I didn't want to try new things. My world became so small. And that's not a fulfilling big life. And yet so many people think the best it gets is going out, getting smashed on a Friday night and not remembering how you got home, waking up with your clothes on, having to sort the kids out on a Saturday morning, feeling like shit, and then doing it all again. And that was all I looked forward to, was that on a Friday night. And I look back on that and go, wow, I'm so glad that I embarked on this journey. It hasn't been easy, but it has been so worth it.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. 100%. Yeah. It is like the blinkers falling off, isn't it? For me, I was like, okay, that's fine, but it's just not going to happen for me. It's not going to happen for me. It might happen for everyone else, but it isn't. So I wonder, what would you say to women whose confidence have got that low and who kind of don't believe it?
I always say the same thing, which is just start by getting curious. Start by just, you don't have to say, I'm never drinking again. You don't have to say, I'm not drinking for 6 months. Start with a small chunk of time and just simply see it as an experiment. And before you start the experiment, look at what your energy is like, look at what your self-talk is like, look at what your mood and emotions are like, how you're parenting, how you're showing up at work, how your sleep is. Just look, give all of those things a score out of 10. And then let's go on a journey together and take a break from booze. And then let's see at the end of that period, where would you mark them out of 10 now? Because most people never take a long enough break to actually know what the difference is. But when we've got that data, when we've got that information, we can make an informed decision and we can go, right, so which version of my life, which version of me do I like better? But if we don't give ourselves that chance, and for some people it will take more than a month, right? Because some people, depending on how long we've been drinking and how much, we can still be feeling utterly shit after a month. And so it might take 3 months before you really start to feel better and feel energetic and stuff. But and I always just say how hard it is at the start is not how hard it's going to be forever. And we just have to remember that as well.
Yeah, I love that. And that curiosity piece is so powerful, isn't it? Because if we're curious, it literally, we're coming from a different place in the brain.
Yeah.
Which engages, I have to say this, it's very early in the morning for me because Sarah's in Australia. So my mind is ranging freely.
I love it.
So, you know, it is, because what I love about this now, and you do put this in the book, there is a module on science. There's a section on the science in the book. And I feel like that for women is really, really powerful, is powerful intel. Because actually, when we're curious, it activates a different part of the brain than when we're just reacting and fearful. You know, prefrontal cortex, and that's where all our good decisions are made, right? So there's so much to be said for that sober curiosity. And the other bit I love about what you said is gathering data and a reflective, you know, when you say reflective practice to people, some people love it and some people go, oh God, that means I've just got to be doing journaling and I've got to kind of do this and it's all a bit worthy. But actually, I always say that bit of reflective practice is key intel and data gathering so that we can understand what's going on and then make better choices in line with what we want.
Because the fact of the matter is, Kay, I completely agree with you. Like, we are the only person that understands planet us, right? So this is our world. This is our life. No one else has got the information that we've got about how we're feeling, what our energy is, what our self-talk is like. No one knows. Like, on the outside, no one knew I had a problem with booze. On the inside, my self-talk was disgusting and it was horrible. But on the outside, I was all smiles. I'm fine. Everything's okay. So we've got to take responsibility for ourselves. And I think that starts with the full recognition that our life is our responsibility. It's no one else's job to make us happy. It's no one else's job to come along and go, okay, everything's a bit shit for you at the moment. Let me just sort everything out for you. Like, no one is doing that. And I think the moment we take full responsibility for our life and we take responsibility for the decisions we're making is when we can start to change things. Because if we notice that something's not working and we notice something isn't going well, then that's awareness. And awareness brings about change. But if we stay in subconscious living of just doing all the same things that we've always done, know that we feel a bit shit, but not doing anything about it or asking ourselves the important questions, 5 years can go by. And I don't, you know, like it's incredible how much time we can waste just staying still, not making any progress in our lives, emotionally, physically, any of those things, because alcohol's just keeping us, I think it stunts our growth, you know?
Yeah. And I love what you said about that. And this is when I hear that, I hear self-care and I hear self-leadership.
Yeah.
Essentially, which when you think about it, because this, you know, for me, my value system around alcohol, we sort of talked a little bit about that, you know, about the Gen X and the fact that we, you know, we rebelled. That was part of my value system, was that I'm going to be a feminist and I'm going to rebel. And part of my value system as well was really knowing that self-care was really important, not having a clue how to do it, but thinking that booze was self-care. So there was this, I had to uncouple my, so it's very, very important to know what our values are, and you cover this in the book, to uncouple it from the drinking and then to couple it to your choice to be alcohol-free. And I'm wondering if you could just dive into that a little bit more with us around, you know, around values and why they're important.
Yeah. So something that became very, and I didn't know my core values at all, ever, never, ever done any kind of values exercise. I didn't know myself. Like, I'd grown up in the 90s, I was born in the 70s in the north of England. I'd grown up and I had started drinking at 14. And then alcohol had just been present in my life all the time. And so when it came to doing some of this deeper work, which I did in sobriety, I didn't do it while I was drinking, I did a values exercise. And then I realized, okay, my core values are connection, like that sense of belonging, loyalty with people is a really strong core value to me. Family, because I had quite a dysfunctional family. So for me to offer my kids a family unit that I didn't have is really important to me. Health, because I want to live long. I want to have a long, exciting life. Adventure, because I want to do new things, be brave, try exciting things, and learning. Right. So those are my five core values. Every single one of them was being compromised by me drinking. I valued family, and yet I couldn't get my kids to bed fast enough to be able to go back and get pissed, and sometimes didn't even remember conversations with them. I valued my health, and yet I was drinking probably 5 times the recommended units of alcohol per week. I valued connection, and yet when I was drinking, I could be a two-faced bitch who would be like telling people secrets, very loose-lipped, and because I was trying to get people to like me. And there's so much shame that comes with that. And so now I realize, no wonder I was so miserable all the time, because I was compromising my values every day. And actually, when you're compromising your values, it makes you feel very wrong inside. And when you feel very wrong inside, but you don't understand that, you drink more to make that wrong feeling go away. And so you just stay in this vicious circle of feeling crap, drinking to get rid of the feeling of feeling crap, the drinking making you feel crap. And so it continues. And so it was such a gift to break away from the booze and do some of this reflective work and go, drinking alcohol takes me away from every single one of my core values. So why would I go back to it? I was on a podcast yesterday and I was asked, what do you miss about drinking? And I just sat there. And I just was like,
to the silence.
I can't think of a single thing that I can say right now, because what is there to miss?
Yeah, I love the tumbleweed, you know, when you get like someone who's like, who still drinks, or like you go on a kind of a not sober curious, like a not a sober sphere podcast, and then there's some of these kind of, it sounds a bit rude, but really basic questions like that, like, And there's just that tumbleweed of like, oh,
Yeah.
this just doesn't occur to me anymore. And who would
I
have thought?
know.
Who would have thought? Because the fear being so big at the beginning. I just want to ask you, because there's a couple of things that you've mentioned there about, you know, the core values are so important, like you said. And this goes back to, you know, when problematic drinking shows up in our life, for years we can have this mismatch between the outside and the inside. And no one would know, like you say, we become masters or mistresses of disguise. And inside we can feel terrible, but it all looks like we're working really hard, everything looks fine, which is, you know, this kind of masking element. And I know that you speak to that directly in the book, you know, what are we masking? And I wonder if we could just dive into that bit, because I found that very, very useful.
Yeah, and I think there's different masks that we wear that we're covering up when we're drinking, but we don't even know we're doing it. You know, like that is the, you know, one of the key things is when we're drinking, we are living, we think that everything in our life is as it should be without realizing underneath that we're actually wearing a mask. I was, you know, there were so many masks that I was wearing in terms of, but didn't know. I didn't know that I need my own time, and actually I don't want to be with people all the time. I thought I was a really gregarious, outgoing person that liked company all the time, and now I've realized how exhausted I get when I'm with people all the time, and how much I need my own space. You know, there's so much that we start to uncover because we can't know ourselves when we're drinking all the time. The persona that I was actually not my authentic self. But you can't know your authentic self because alcohol changes you. It really does. It's not like having an addiction with sugar or having an addiction with caffeine or whatever. Alcohol actually changes your behavior because of what it does to the brain. And then you become someone that actually you might not be. And isn't it a shame that many people will spend their entire time on this earth without ever really meeting their authentic self and knowing the person that they actually really are.
Yeah, it feels like a really missed opportunity, like the most fundamentally missed opportunity. Our central kind of, you're speaking my language there, Sarah. You know, like I feel like, again, where we started with relationship to self, relationship to others, relationship to booze. And booze, we develop such a relationship with it to meet all of those, to falsely attempt to meet all those needs, to regulate, to self-soothe, essentially just numbing, that we lose that, really, it impacts our relationship with others. For me, I think because, and for many grey area drinkers, where the wheels haven't gone off, all the wheels aren't off the wagon, and because maybe there isn't this kind of social impact around us, but the impact on self, the relationship with self, is utterly devastating, and we miss that chance to be in our one wild and precious life.
The first thing that I would say to myself most mornings would be, well, you're a loser.
Yeah.
Well, you're shit, aren't you? Because you said you were only going to have one or two last night, and you've had two bottles, and you've left the car at your friend's house, and how are you going to get there to go and get the car to get the kids to sport? And you know, like if the first thing you say to yourself in the morning is something like that, what chance have you got of feeling positive, hopeful, happy, content? You just can't. And so you're
Yeah.
putting on an act all the time, but inside you're just dying. And that's exhausting.
Yeah.
It's really exhausting. And so, yeah, to actually get to know yourself, it's hard. It's not easy doing that work of, you know, unpacking some of those masks and those layers and why they are there and what they have served us for. But I think it's also truly liberating.
Yeah, and it's hard as being stuck in drinking, I think.
Yeah,
Towards the
I
end, you know,
agree.
and I love what you said about, you know, the trajectory of drinking. So magic to medicine
Medicine, yeah.
to misery, which is what that is. So we start being kind of, you know, yeah, it's fun when we start. We have no idea that it's going to develop, you know, that trajectory of alcohol use disorder, essentially, to their medicine. So let's unpack that. That's what we're talking about, trying to medicate our feelings, trying to falsely soothe our stress, and then we end up at the misery piece, which is what you're saying, right? Actually, every morning I beat up on myself and I feel shit. I feel more and more divorced from myself and my feelings and my values and my truth. And my life. So what are the key steps then to coming back to ourselves?
I think it's an ever-evolving journey. Like, I'm still learning. I had a really funny situation the other day, and there's me going, I've come so far. I've got all this self-help stuff sussed. And then something happened that just triggered me so badly, okay? And you know when you just have those wake-up calls that you're like, yeah, I've still got work to do. But I saw Jean McCarthy, the host of the Bubble Hour podcast from Canada. She was in Perth. And so I met her. She did a talk to the ladies in my community. And she was saying, I hope I'm still doing work on myself when I'm 80. Like, yeah. I think it's an acceptance of knowing we're never quite done. And that it is, you know, a journey of self-discovery. At the start for me, when I first got sober and when I knew that this was it forever, I went into therapy and I started doing a specific style of therapy called schema therapy, which is a bit like internal family systems therapy, where you really explore the coping strategies that you've developed through your life in like response to little t or big t traumas that you've had. And through exploring that, I got to know myself. I got to understand the different parts of me, why they are there and why they're so strong, and to not despise them and not hate them, to understand the role that they've played, but to actually know that there is also a part of me that is myself. So self is now the leader. And the way that I've been able to discover self and do that has been through the somatic work. So it's been yoga, it's been breath work, it's been, really deep somatic healing practices have made such a difference. Because I do think you can do all the talking therapy in the world, and I had incredible cognitive awareness of why I responded the way I did to certain things and what the triggers had been in my life to cause me to have these different coping strategies. But how do you actually heal from what's in your body? And that was when, for me, breath work has been an absolute game changer. And when I say breath work, I don't do group breath work. So I do one-on-one once a month, 90-minute session with a practitioner where everything, I just have this relationship and time with myself that I don't get any other time in my life.
This sober streak is 8 years now, even though I started 11 years ago. This particular, you know, my now touch wood forever streak, touching all the wood. And that is the time that I've had a yoga practice.
Yeah.
And it was the somatic, the breathing, the moving, the processing, because actually, and walking the dogs is processing the ongoing stress and trauma, because trauma is just stress on the nervous system, right? Essentially, that's how it's showing up. Yeah. So that movement piece is so important, isn't it? To be able to kind of help our nervous systems and kind of release stress. It's just a really key thing. It's almost like that, yeah, we can know all the head knowledge, but actually those tools are real, and we need to move.
But no one really talks about it, right? No one out there I know is like, I think so many women move their body to lose weight because they have a really dysfunctional relationship with their body, and they kind of see exercise as punishment, etc. Whereas I come at this, I love exercising, but the somatic work isn't about exercise. Somatic work is about really tuning into your body and being able to tell when your nervous system is becoming dysregulated. What might have caused that? What can I do to bring myself back in tune with myself? All things that I didn't have a chance in hell of doing when I was drinking.
No, God, I totally get, I really vibe with that as well. It's again, this different relationship, isn't it? I feel like it's like what society tells us how to move, how to be, what to drink, what to do. And this fundamental act of going sober is like the welcome mat to getting really curious about ourselves. And even that, when you talk about that, I'm like, Yes, that is, if that's even that, if the way we move needs to reframe, because actually it's about feeling into our body, that intuitive movement. And again, gathering into how am I feeling? What do I need? How do I regulate? And it's just so empowering. So in terms of the book, Sarah, like what can women expect to get from reading your book?
Yeah, like I said earlier, I think it's a book that isn't about how to get sober. It's a book about how to create a life where you don't want or need alcohol. So it's about coming at it with a mindset of abundance of what do I gain? And I tackle all the things that I see come up time and time again for women who are really struggling with grey area drinking. And just to kind of say here, you don't have to be drinking copious amounts to still have alcohol taking from you. I think as we age, and I go into this a lot in the book, for women, our body cannot metabolize alcohol in our 40s and 50s like it does in our 20s and 30s. So alcohol starts to impact us. I've got a client who was drinking 2 or 3 glasses of wine 3 or 4 nights a week, which some people would go, that's nothing. But for her, it was impacting because she was in perimenopause and alcohol was causing such bad anxiety and everything else. So again, it's recognizing there isn't a number that you need to be drinking in order to go, right, now I'm at the number where I have to make a difference. It's not about a number, it's about a feeling. Yeah. And recognizing what's the feeling, is it taking more than it's giving? And so in the book, I talk about women and alcohol, why alcohol impacts us differently to men and why it impacts us more as we age. I've got a couple of really good resources in there from menopause coaches and menopause doctors who've come in and talked about alcohol and the impact on those menopause symptoms. And then a really key part in there is the relationships we have with partners when we remove alcohol. And I've done like a really deep dive into what that looks like, because I'm sure you're the same. It's a question that comes up time and time again. What do I do if my partner still drinks? And it's something we've done together for the last 20, 30 years. And now I'm not drinking. I feel really disconnected to them. I feel like we're just not even on the same path anymore. And I'm scared. I'm scared that my marriage isn't going to last. And so I've gone into all of that as well. I've talked about sober sex, because I can't tell you the number of my clients who just are horrified at the thought of sober sex because they've been using alcohol to get in the mood and relax for quite some time. And so, and then I also talk about what are the boundaries that we need to start setting, because I'm sure you see this as well. Many women use alcohol as self-care, as a reward, as a relaxant, because it's really easy to use it whilst you're also unloading the dishwasher, making dinner, getting the lunches ready, peeling the potatoes, doing the ironing, and it doesn't take you out of the kitchen. But you still feel like you're getting something for yourself. And so I talk about, and there's so much guilt that comes with women going, I can't go and do a yoga class. I can't. The kids need me. My husband needs me. Everything will fall apart. Mm. And I really challenge some of that around how we can start to set boundaries around knowing that we are entitled to take a little bit of time to ourselves. Mm. And it doesn't always have to be an hour out of the house to go and do a yoga class. It can be, and there's lots of suggestions in the book for what that might look like.
Yeah, so you're so right. And I did notice that about the book, is it's like almost like that they're focusing on abundance, but also speaking to those roadblocks that can come up and then sort of troubleshooting really practically. And I found that so useful. And, you know, and at the end of the day, we shouldn't have to be convenient. And I think that's why a lot of us drink to be convenient. To drink away the edges so that we can just be all things, do all things, carry on, not have real preferences, go with the flow, fit in. And this book for me is like such a great toolkit to stop doing that. And just go, actually, I've got to put myself in the picture here. Yeah, so.
Yeah, it's a book. And at the heart of the book, it is saying, you, my love, get to matter. You, my love, get to create a life you love because you deserve it. Yeah. And I don't think we hear that enough.
Yeah, 100%. Thank you so much. It's brilliant. And it's been just so great to talk to you. Before we go, we do our little ritual, don't we? What's your reason to love sober today?
For me, it is the tools and skills that I have developed to be able to process things with my kids. There's been a couple of things going on recently that I've had to dig deep, and I would not have had the skills and the tools if I was still drinking. I wouldn't have known how to deal with it. But it is the gift that keeps on giving, because even now, at almost 5 years sober, I've had a situation come up I wasn't expecting, and I was able to sit down and navigate it in a completely different way with skills that I've learned because I'm sober. And then my kids get so much benefit from that as well. So I get to parent in such a different way to how I was parented. And that was exactly what I wanted when I became a mum.
Oh, that's beautiful. Thank you, Sarah. It's been amazing, amazing to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Kate.